Call the meeting to order, Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Is there any public comment?
Pardon?
Is there public comment before we get into the agenda?
No.
Okay. Okay. All right, so the first thing that we're going to do is a discussion with John from Olympic Property Group to talk about how we might collaborate in 2017.
Great. I'm all yours.
Well, one of the things that's near and dear to my heart, and we've talked about it, is the possible expansion of Fort Boundary Lines to incorporate some of Port Campbell. And we need to, if we're going to move forward, get that on the ballot by June. So we need to plan, and obviously OPG is a key player in that arena. And one of the things that I'd like to know is maybe some plans that you might have for that spit so that we can see how the port can interface. Because obviously if we're going to expand a boundary line, we need to give the citizens something for that and how we can play in that development.
So there's a couple of ways the port's mission could be directed if we ended up with an annexation, because it's not just the town. You'd be annexing all of the new forest land that the county owns. You'd be annexing some of the lands that they don't own yet. And they're...
Just a fine point. I don't know if it's part of the port if it's county land. That may be a fine legal distinction there. That I don't think the county, can be under our jurisdiction when their properties can't be. So I don't think that it would have.
Well,
we'll check that out.
I think there's something.
I know you won't be collecting much in the way of tax.
Right.
But I think if they are in just like there's the park that's in the Port district right now. I mean, they're in your district. I think there's going to be, for the next 50 years, endless opportunities to do trail improvements and trail things. And your ability to go out for grants is a little bit different than the county's. And so I think there's endless public benefit just on the trail system in terms of the kinds of grants and having a second, agency able to apply separately in the name of economic development and community enhancement. I think that fits right within a port and a wheelhouse. And you can't always just rely on one of the agencies always having an appetite for it, and the county's really stepped up in a big way, but now going forward, because people in Bremerton affect policy up in Kingston, and having an agency here that cares about North Kitsap things, I think could be really valuable for everybody. We'll probably be long gone before all that happens, but in terms of having to apply for grants for things and that, so.
One thing that's quite common is public-private partnerships where ports have taken over industrial land.
Uh-huh.
You've gotten grants for cleanups.
Brownfield.
I know. No, we had
pretty very effective there.
Yeah, very effective. And then down on the spit, we're going to go through an EIS process. We're making some modifications, and we'll end up having two alternatives that we come out with in public. Because with an EIS, you always have to have several alternatives. And one of the alternatives is always the do nothing, just leave it as it is alternative. And then the preferred alternative will be the full build out of town in the former mill site, which we call the spit, which is 26 acres of flat, once we take the sediments off. And then we'll have, because you have to have an alternative, we'll have an alternative that basically shows less development on the mill site and the creation of a major public park. And so there's that. That park, maybe it's 1 acre. You know, what we'll tell folks is that we're open to the idea of selling development rights down there. And it's waterfront. There will be lots of opportunity to sell development rights for us through other means. And so that wherever we sell development rights, that can go back to open space. The plan will show at least 16 acres of that. Maybe it isn't all 16 acres, but we will make the offer to the community if the community wants, just like we did with the Kitsap Forest and Bay, if the community wants to work with us on creating an open space down there, because there's lots of folks interested in having no development down there, which we can't accommodate that, then that's something we can work on together as well, possibly even in the grant. Going for grants for that, and then the creation of what I think would probably be one of the most popular parks around, mm-hmm. Because it's going to be up in the town, it's on the water, I think it's and it's on a tourist route going out to Peninsula. I think it would just be an incredibly well utilized facility. And then along with that, we're going to propose building a dock. We're not going to propose a marina in our plan, the dock is something we can talk about whether or not that's a publicly owned dock.
We have a lot of demand that may spill over there for the particularly tribal and commercial fishermen to place offload and load.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that another site would probably be very attractive to them, particularly when they're fishing Hood Canal area.
Mm-hmm.
But we're at capacity on. When the fish are running.
Yeah.
Well, the Salisbury Point people would be really happy if there was relief up there from them.
We had always envisioned as part of the mix, the sort of in town of creating atmosphere was the idea of unloading the catch of the day, assuming it isn't creating total chaos down there. It was something we've always been open to and interested in. I think it adds a lot of texture to the experience of being up in Port Campbell.
It was a port that reefed. Not long ago, talked about building a nice machine house and having limited ability to provide shore-based facilities to handle the catch. I don't remember which one it was, but it was a small port, kind of like us.
Mm-hmm.
So there could be some potential there for things that would be attractive to the community and the tribe as well.
So, and then, all the things in the open space, trails and, some facilities and amenities, I think would be amazing. Parks that sit out by themselves, are great amenities, but they don't build community. They just don't. Parks that are next to, villages, next to food and beverage, next to where people can walk to, really create community. It's a completely different energy that a park creates. A park just out in the woods is a wonderful thing, but it's not where you create community. But the mixture of parks with food and beverage and activities and bring it into where people live, that is one of the greatest tools for creating a sense of place.
Hmm.
So that's always some kind of park down on the spit has always been part of our thoughts.
In order for the port to assume that became part of the mm-hmm. jurisdiction, or for us to telephone, we would have to own the property.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, way too early to talk about how that might be done, but are we open to that in such a way that we're not necessarily having to, bond ourselves for the foreseeable future to do that?
Yeah, I think if we go, if we're able to sell development rights, and we will be able to sell development rights, there is just, we've got a lot of experience in going for grants now after 10 years of the Kitsap Forest and Bay. And the challenge with Kitsap Forest and Bay is most of the land in terms of granting agencies appears to be uninteresting and not unique and not having special environmental qualities. That's just, we just, most of the land doesn't rain. And that's why Forterra and the county and the tribes are doing a private campaign, because we've kind of exhausted the abilities to raise money for the Kitsap Forest and Bay project. But if you're on saltwater, there are endless grants, and that is prime habitat. And to be able to bring that back and to replace the old mill site with open space. So the bottom line is we would sell our development rights, and then the land's economic value would be almost nothing. So there, that's where there's no need to bond and take on a big expense, because that's what the grant does. It buys the development rights down.
They said there's no plans to put a marina. Is that, because of course that's one of the first things that pops into my mind as a port district. You know, mm-hmm. A facility may be patterned after this. I don't know anything about size, but is that site feasible for a marina, or are there other reasons why you just don't plan a marina there?
Physically, it could accommodate a shill shoal marina. Environmentally, it won't. Yeah. It just won't. It's just the clip, you know, the bay has got a very narrow neck. A marina is an automatic shellfish closure. And so all the tribal harvesting in the bay would have to stop. And it's too much pain for the game, you know, at least at this point. I guess if we and the tribe decided together differently, we could, but I doubt that. I doubt that's going to happen.
Would that be true even if you just put in a boat ramp and a facility for the catch of the day kind of idea, and commercial fishing, being able to offload liquor?
Oh, I don't think so. I think that, first of all, we're going to leave the boat ramp, any boat ramps, we're going to leave at Salisbury. It's just, you know, it would just be too hard to accommodate inside the bay. I think the tribe would be totally against a boat ramp. But being able to pull up to a dock, offload on a dock, and then cart things to a truck is not a bad option. So the dock, I think, would accommodate that really, really well.
I think you might want to revisit the ramp, the tribe, because mm-hmm. they are very heavy users of our ramp. Very heavy users. And their trucks, and having a proper staging area where the trucks can stay, may have power so they can turn off their fishing engines, you know, and get power for that. If they could do there what they're doing here, it may be very attractive to them. Now, we get tribes from all over. We get people from up north doing videos and things, but I think the local tribes, it's worth having that discussion.
Well, have they ever tried just unloading it on the dock and then bringing it up, or is it just more expedient because you have a ramp?
Here's what happens. It opens here in Kingston. They put their boats in Kingston. It closes here in Kingston. They pull their boats out in their trailers and they go over to the Hood Canal. Then they put them in over the Hood Canal. So, yeah, because that's where they launch their vessels. It's not like ships.
Okay, so it's trailer. It's trailer loaded vessels.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we can fill up our parking here in the forward.
Well, we don't have a fishery here in. That the tribe utilizes, do we, here in the cove?
Well, they do gooey ducks off of the point here.
Well, gooey ducks, yeah.
Yeah, and it depends upon the season. Sometimes it's open. Puget Sound is very complicated in terms of treaty rights, because a lot of tribes participate in them. But yes, there's fishing here. But not way in.
I'm just very aware of how precious the Port Gamble Bay is.
Yeah, that's, I think it is very, very sensitive. So, and then after we just did all this cleanup, $25 million worth of cleaning up, doing anything that might sort of compromise that is a challenging conversation.
There's a differentiation between Port Gamble Bay and the rest of the fishing areas, which they manage very precisely. They count the number of fish every day and all that sort of stuff.
The Gamble Bay, though, the Port Gamble squams have special access to that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, pulling a bunch of folks in from all over to boat ramps that might Just the aesthetic impact of all the noise can be kind of an issue. So
a nuance on the park. We can develop waterfront parks and parks adjacent to transportation centers, but we couldn't develop a park away from that. I mean, we can only do what the law says we can do, and our park development is limited to what we've been doing so far. In terms of an inland park, unless it was next to a transportation terminal, because of every design, we wouldn't be able to do that. So,
I'm guessing just a dock doesn't qualify as a transportation terminal.
Well, it's on the water, that's okay. The waterfront parks.
Oh, okay.
Waterfront parks we can do, and parks next to transportation terminals we can do, but that's as far as we
can. I think even waterfront parks, don't they have to be somehow related to some other aspect of what we're doing?
You're getting above my head. I know we pursued it when we were developing Washington Avenue Park, and there were two things. It was to be a waterfront park, but it also was a park adjacent to the ferry terminal. So it fit the criteria. That fit the criteria. And the same thing for Mike Wallace Park.
So a question that I have, John, is I know the county and some of the cities have done a pretty extensive hydrologic assessment of what roads would be impacted by sea level rise. And as I think about the spit, that's a question. Have you had that kind of assessment done?
Yeah, with our engineers, there's, I can't quote it, but there's kind of an accepted range of new elevations, and so for any buildings and stuff, we're going to be above that. But we're going to have to bring fill, to do that. I don't think we bring a lot of fill for a park right now. I think we need to wait and see what happens. If they were, it would just depend on what happens. So, but yeah, no, our guys are aware of that issue.
This is a very attractive alternative, even from an art perspective, because Jim comes from an entrepreneurial port. And the problem with our port now is our footprint. That really limits what we can do. We've got a certain geographic footprint, which is pretty constrained, and you really probably pushed it to its limits with the property acquisitions we've done and the planning we've done. So if we're going to be able to stimulate the economy with things that require more area, we really need some access to places where that's affordable to do, and has less impact on residential folks. If you put in a business park or something like that. So I think it's very attractive because it gives the port, maybe not in my lifetime, but in someone's lifetime, the ability to really help the North End economy.
Yeah.
Because partnerships work, I think. They have worked with other ports.
And it would be a situation where we're imposing a tax on ourselves, but I think that there would be a benefit. I think we're all connected now through trails and open spaces. I don't think there's a hard line to the end of Kingston. We're getting working up along. This is just a small place. We all use each other's facilities all the time, and being able to do more. For Gamble than we would have been able to do ourselves. It's going to be good for people in Kingston and the rest of, frankly, the rest of the county. So we're all using each other's facilities. We're just a small place. But the single development rights makes it just takes the big capital hurdle away.
Can you talk a little bit about the makeup of the community there? Tribal interest, we've got OPG. The area that we're sort of looking at in terms of potential expansion or annexation. What is that in terms of community and people and interest in existing economic engine? What would be there?
Well, so what's there today is a population of 70. When the town was at its peak, it was a population between 700 and 800. So in town, it's literally soup to nuts. you got too many notes. But it's a typical suburban, you know, community. Inside town and outside of town, there's folks that have owned land on Gamble Bay on the west side. That would be part of the accident. There's folks that have owned land there for everyone. Gracie's Nursery has been there for a very long time. There's a lot of long-time property owners. But it's like everywhere else. There's folks that are new. There's folks that use it primarily for, you know, a getaway on the weekends. You know, not in town, obviously. We own all the stuff in town. But it's not different. It's, I don't think it's very different than any other place, Hansville or Kingston, Twin Towns.
When you were briefly, I forget which one, what you mentioned, you made a big emphasis of trying to provide the type of development to attract multi-generational population. So you're talking about Kingston and Hansville. You're not talking multi-generational right now. We're drifting towards the retirement community, taking up there in Hansville. So my understanding was one of your intents was to have working family attracted there as well as retirees.
Fort Campbell will not have starter housing. It's not going to have starter housing. Our idea on the multi-generational was, you know, we had a lot of experience with a sort of single age demographic in Port Loma. And what I came away from that not liking was the degree to which people just didn't want kids around. And, you know, Port Ludlow never established a town center, never established an activity center, and so it's really, really quiet. And, you know, it attracted people who just wanted quiet. And part of multi-generational, you know, it can be, you know, not necessarily grandkids who can afford to live there, but grandkids who are welcome to come there for the weekend. Because in Port Ludlow, it would be like, get those kids out of the pool, they're noisy, you know, it was just really negative. And I think by creating a town that is an all-ages town with lots of activities and trails, that's our idea on how you take someone that's not going to be the most affordable place and make it welcoming. Because people have grandkids, and grandkids come out for the weekend, and if they can't do anything, they're bored, and they don't come out and see their grandparents anymore. It's like every time my kids went to see my parents, it was like, oh my God, we got to be in the condo all day. And so it's not going to be through affordability, but it'll be because the town is alive and it welcomes everybody. Yeah, there's a place there for everybody.
Do you see any potential for commercial type activities out there, knowledge workers or small manufacturers or something that would provide an employment base?
There's just not, our zoning code actually would allow us to rebuild a sawmill. So we have the legal right to build a sawmill.
Don't do that.
We're not going to do that. But I think, you know, the reality is there isn't that much of a footprint left. And when you say the waterfront is not going to be a working waterfront, that's very, very limited on how much non-residential we can do. So in town, there will be infill of more small businesses. I see on the waterfront, there's probably, you know, a great restaurant site. But knowledge workers won't want to pay the rent of a waterfront restaurant, you know, a waterfront location. For us, one of the big areas where I think that can happen is in back of town. Have you ever been to the property where the nurseries are? Well, we bought back the original farm about 10 years ago. There was the original Port Gamble farm. It was called the Babcock Farm. And we bought that back to kind of complete the jigsaw puzzle. And we'll be building a road right on the edge of those pastures and up to the ride park. There's a mountain bike ride park that's proposed, which is, you know, like a destination area for mountain bikes. Along the way, in that whole area, we call the agricultural district. And you go out there today, there's people working in nurseries, there's a seedling nursery, there's metal buildings, there's people running a pasture. And so our idea is tourism related to agriculture. So we've got, if you look at our plan, there's a place for a couple wineries as you wind up the hill. I think it would be an awesome place for a creamery. And then small agricultural related businesses is what we see going there. Westlawn Wildlife Shelter is relocating up there into that agricultural district. So they're out on a fundraising campaign right now to move their hospital and their facilities up to Port Gamble in a few years. So that really fits with kind of our idea of not just making the town, you know, pretty, but also making it very, very interesting. I don't know if you've ever been out there, but there's a marine science lab on the hillside. I don't know if you've ever seen that. That was an idea of when it's been out there for 10 years. That was an idea of just making some interesting things happen in Port Gamble. And not just be about t-shirts and, you know, fish and chips and tourism things.
So how do you get out there?
To where?
To the area, the agricultural zone that you're talking. What road would I take out?
So if you go towards the Hood Canal Bridge, you'll see a sign for the Port Gamble Nursery right on the west end of town. Mm-hmm. And there's a left you take there.
Okay.
And if you go and look, there's 40,000 feet of greenhouse. So there's an acre of glass. Okay. Our plan calls for additional nursery space, and then small ag businesses being in that location.
Is that privately owned or is that part of
it? It's all privately. I mean, it's owned by us.
Yeah.
We lease. Half of the nursery is leased for seedlings. And the other half of the greenhouse is Brad from Valley Nursery leases that.
Seedlings as in forest seedlings?
Reforestation, but also he grows, he's done a lot of restoration, growing sedges and sort of other things that happen in stream restoration.
How does the possibility of a passenger ferry affect your planning?
It's going to be the same plan with or without the ferry. It just might mean it has a little higher certainty of success.
So you're not going to leverage off Seattle workers? Is that what I'm hearing?
Oh, no. We will put the welcome mat out all the way to Colton Dock for anybody that wants to live there. But, you know, you never know where your buyers are going to come from. You do studies, but you don't really know. And I think somebody in Seattle would be amazed to be able to go home at night to Port Gamble. I think there will be Seattle people there.
When John was briefing through there, when the KCAC and this fellow from Alabama said, well, I came here to work, I'm a knowledge worker, and, you know, South Lake Union is becoming the next San Francisco, and all that. And said, I need a quality-like place to live, and that's why I came to Kingston. I don't want to commute an hour and spend a whole bunch of money for a house that's not quality of life for him. And I'm thinking that if Kingston's attractive, probably Port Gamble's very attractive to people who want to raise their families outside of the city.
But there won't be physical changes to the plan. It'll be the same footprint with or without the ferry, and it's just going to end up that the mix of buyers will be different.
So could you see opportunities for the port to get involved in the agritourism part of your development?
You understand your constraints more than
well, we can do that, but do you see a partnership of how we can work?
I'd love to explore it.
In industrial development and on the food processing side? Would
yeah, small scale,
yeah.
Cottage industry would absolutely love that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely love to explore that. Because
okay.
There aren't that small scale anything has a hard time living. It just does. Cottage industry anywhere has a hard time surviving. They're like the same, you know, sort of the same death toll as restaurants. But having it in a location that naturally attracts tourism, and Port Gamble already is attractive, is I think the difference between somebody's out on a country road trying to make something happen and somebody who's right in the stream and being visible by everybody who's riding up, you know, to the ride park and using all the trails and the facilities and using the town. So, I would love to explore ways to make things like that happen. know, other ports build metal buildings and lease them out. We could look at doing things like that. And to make it more attractive for startups.
Well, in Eastern Washington, you know, winery incubators are big. Ports do all sorts of winery incubators. So that's something that really kind of fits in our wheelhouse.
Yeah, it would be really fun to look at. You know, you could do an incubator where there are... The thing with wineries is, as I mistakenly got involved with trying to do something, is all that equipment is just a fortune. Mm-hmm. But there are cooperatives that have shared equipment. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's, I think, a really, really amazing opportunity to have a facility with shared equipment, even if the juice is carted off-site.
Yeah.
And, you know, the trouble is everybody wants the thing all in the same week. but you could, you know, it could be people from throughout the port that have that facility available, and things like slaughterhouses and things like that, you know, nobody has because there isn't enough demand. I think there's lots of different ways we could work together.
The in Kitsap, there is a cooperative mobile slaughter unit.
That's right.
And there's a couple of other pieces of significant equipment that have been purchased and are used on a collaborative basis, co-op kind of basis.
Yeah.
And so the farm community here, the agricultural community that already exists, gets it and can make it work if they
provided
to them.
Yeah. The Port of Columbia, Columbia River, obviously, they use the curb money, economic development state money for a study grant to fund a building, and it was a craft food building. So they had incubators that had various craft food products. It may have been a storefront for a winery, it was someplace else, a beer place, cheese place, all that sort of stuff, which seems like a very good success story in, you know, in terms of using other people's money.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of what it was about. But when you think of the tourist flow through, and I think there are craft food vendors in Kitsap County who really need locations where they can do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then the exposure to people going through adds exposure to the market. You know, it's just a real successful story and good use of port private resources to.
Well, you know, the farm itself is a total amenity for town. And we're not going to own that farm. I mean, Pope isn't going to own the farm, so either the community is going to own it, or we fully intend that there's going to be growing and pasturing. But you know, we could work together to create 3 acres of, you know, really high quality, which is huge, of high quality growing ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something we could do together, and that whole facility can go into a market. Sunday market, a growing co-op. Right now, our plans would be to, you know, get somebody in there to start to work on the farming operation, and then through the power of homeowners associations, charge people as part of their monthly dues a contribution to the CSA. At least, you know, for a 5-year window, so the CSA can get started, or maybe permanently. That this is an amenity in town, and you're going to pay a little bit. And you're going to be, whatever you pay, you're going to get back in produce. When you're forming a homeowners association, you actually have the ability to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if growing in ag is an interest, I think there's a lot that we could collaborate on. I think we could collaborate on things like that in Arborwood as well.
Mm-hmm.
The big picture to me is that Port Gamble is a treasure. And it needs to be. Remain a treasure to the North End. It's for tourism for a lot of reasons, and that treasures don't stay that way unless they're economically viable as well. And I think that collaboration may be important in the future, sustaining that the feature of our county that's kind of unique. Maybe it competes with Port Downs a little bit, but I think it's vital to the North End to keep you vital.
We are
vital.
What I always underestimate as a relative. I've only been here for 20 years, so I'm a newcomer. Mm-hmm. But when you meet people and I get introduced to people and an older generation, it's amazing how many people have had some affiliation in the past with the mill at Fort Campbell. It is much bigger than, they just disappeared into the background, all the people that were associated with that mill. But I meet people all the time. Hey, I delivered logs to Port Gamble. I was at the mill. My uncle was a millwright. I worked at the general store. There's just that thing affected a lot of lives and is a deep part of our history. And so when we did the layout and the sort of the planning for it, I didn't want it to have, we want to find a future for Port Gamble that isn't a carnival. And for 15 of my 20 years, there was a guy, a guy from California, just insanely wealthy, who called and said, "You sell it to me, I want to make it an attraction. I want to make Port Gamble an attraction." And, it's not, we want it to be successful, but we don't want it to be a joke. We want it to have a distinguished future. And one that's authentic and not propped up. So that's why the Marine Lab was important to us. That's the incredible jobs that are there and they deal with the marine environment. And the West Sound Wild Shelter, that's their mission is real. It's not just servicing tourism. But they'll get a benefit through the exposure up there, a huge benefit from that. And the growing, real jobs and people are really pulling stuff out of the earth. And that's the way we think that we can make Fort Gamble attractive to tourists, but also attractive for residents here. And something that's authentic and not kind of a made up Scandinavian or German town in the middle of cactus. Not that that's a bad thing, but that's not what we want for Port Gamble. I mean, I think there's probably a lot of cactus in Bavaria. I know there is in our little Bavaria, there's quite a bit of cactus there.
John, what do you see as the downsides? You've been through a stressful, intense public process. What do you see as the downsides of us getting to this if we wanted to go there?
People wondering with suspicion about what the real plan is. Oh my God, OPG in the port, that must be, there must be something terrible about that. And then, anxiety, which I've only been able to address through education and meeting people. The reality is there's nobody can do a secret thing, but people are pretty sure you can still do a secret thing. But I've never had to do anything secret. I've never had to do that. And so sometimes we take beatings, and I take them welcomely. The education is always going to be the number one challenge. So, and if people, people see for-profit companies, they assume that it must be for-profit and for doom.
Something that, to me, the no action of alternative could mean OPG sells out and we have a carnival and we have massive development and there's no public sensitivity applied to how the properties develop other than arbitrary public meetings and public outreach. But I think from what I've heard here, your heart's in the right place. From a public perspective, maybe not everybody, but I think that's a risk. You're not always going to be here, John. Nor will OPG, maybe. I don't know.
No, definitely. I mean, the whole Kids at Forest Bay is the company exiting slowly, albeit painfully, out of North Kitsap. But that is, this is an exit plan. And where the contract with the public gets done is an entitlement. The entitlement sets all the rules for the road ahead. And my company is so fatigued with Port Gamble. Every year, we write a check of at least $250,000 to keep it looking like it looks. So when we collect rents and all that, pay taxes, we've lost money on that ever since the mill closed in 1995. And the company is super fatigued. And, you know, knowing that as we go forward, we could do $100 billion worth of environmental cleanup, and we will still get roasted by people on it, no matter what good we do. And, you know, our board needs us to get through this, and somebody might buy it from us. But the best assurance is getting us in charge of the master plan, so we set the contract with the public. That's what the entitlement process is. Here's no, then no matter who buys it, there's a set of rules that everybody has to go by. And so the entitlement process is the most important. I'll tell you, my board's pretty fatigued with talking about poor Gamble and all the stuff. They just are.
With the prospect of poor being involved with the board help them hang on?
I think it would be encouragement, but it wouldn't move the needle, just because every year, no matter what, for the next 5 years, we're going to continue to subsidize the town. I think they're just not as close to it. Also, but you know what they're close to is my operating report that I submit every month. And but I think, you know, as part of a bigger story, you know, they know that Port Gamble has potential, and to think that there's somebody besides us that cares about it and thinks it's a good thing, I think that would be encouraging to them. But it won't be, you know, getting through this entitlement process is going to be the most important thing. And getting it through without, you know, being too roundly beat on.
So, in terms of, you know, if there's an annexation, which probably will, you know, everyone else in the community in the annex area also gets the vote. Other than the, this is better than the alternative pitch, what would their interest be? How could we package the idea of our involvement? Hi, we're here to help you with your additional $80 a year tax bill or whatever. What's in it for them that we can articulate?
Better public facilities. Better public facilities that everybody is going to get a benefit from. For a private developer, building and owning a park, that's not a business plan. No private developer wants to just own a park. We're not going to own a park. And then that park is going to attract tons of people, and they're going to need parking. Otherwise, the parking for our stuff down the hillside will be dysfunctional. And so having an attractive facility that is here for everybody and all of our out-of-town guests that always visit us, and many of us take them up to Port Gamble, having those public facilities be better than they otherwise would, and owned by the public, so we have the certainty that the public's going to have a benefit from them. And then helping us make Port Gamble amazing through the agricultural piece. I mean, it's very rare that one owner has so much facility to work with without having 70 different owners to take a vote in town. There's so much we can do because we still own the town and we still sort of direct the future of it. And it's just an extremely rare opportunity to make something amazing happen. And agriculture, for the owner of the land, is not a business plan. So if it's really going to happen, you know, some sort of agency, if it really needs to happen, going to happen in a big way, then some agency involvement is going to be part of the solution there. So we can lay the groundwork for things. I can even create irrigated growing areas, but who takes care of it when it's gone and when we're out of here? And that's, you know, it's easy to build stuff and walk away, but having it shepherded, somebody that's in charge of it, and it's that facility's there for everybody, not just people in Port Gamble, I think there's a lot to be done.
I think job creation is going to be a big thing. I mean, that's something we can sell with that much facility, that much land, that much potential, especially in agritourism. Mm-hmm. I think job creation could be job one. Waterfront Park, too, but as far as from our core mission of job creation, I think that would be better than some of the property we have here.
More likely they'll attract capital to invest. We don't know how that would be, but invest in a way that has a public benefit. That's one thing that ports can do, mm-hmm. is we can guide development so it's public interest is considered. I think Save Port Gamble is what kind of jumps up in my mind.
Well, it cannot keep going. I mean, if somebody said you're not going to get approved, then that place is, I mean, it's open on the promise that we're going to be able to do something with it. If we can't do something with it, it has no economic purpose left. Then you're not going to put the $20 million of infrastructure in the ground that's needed. You know, we just built a wastewater treatment plant. We now have decent, you know, PUD water. The wastewater treatment plant can produce is tertiary. You know, that water can be reused with a little bit of additional ultraviolet treatment. So, and it'll be the most sustainable town because today, we've reinvested in 50 what were cruddy buildings. All the stormwater today is untreated. When we're done, 95% of the existing roads, the stormwater will be treated. And I think there's a model town. I think there's a model town to be worked on there.
What's the time frame on that infrastructure as you're seeing it now?
Well, I got to get through the master plan, and that's going to be 2 years. And then we can go from there. I mean, the sewer treatment plant, you might want to even come up and check it out when it gets opened. Because we're going to be taking one of the last outfalls of Hood Canal out. And it gets pumped up the hill into a whole area that's underway by sand. And, you know, it's reverse osmosis. It could be treated. All this discussion about Kingston and the big plant there will be ready to go sooner. And that town is going to be, that plant and the reused water is going to be right next to the town. So, I mean, the chances of water being reused in Port Gamble are much sooner and much more practical than Kingston and getting a pipe up to the Commons.
If I had heard about a cottage development that's going in somewhere?
Yeah, a cottage, it's a misleading term. A cottage is a style of housing where you don't try to give everybody a driveway. And you have to walk, some of the people have to, you know, you have a common parking area, and people have to walk to their house. And if you've been to Seabrook, they've got cottages. When we think cottages, I'm thinking the lake in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and walleye fishing. So it's not that. It's a style of housing where there's a common parking area, and then, you know, the homes all are facing each other on an interior courtyard, and you walk from here to your house. And it's it doesn't work in many areas. I think it'll totally work in Port Gamble. It works in areas where there are amenities to walk to, and it's that kind of person is attracted. If you put it in the middle of a farm in the middle of nowhere, it would never work. But if you want to see good examples of that, the Erickson cottages that Charlotte Winslow did, are just a great example.
And
of that.
Where is that going to be?
Located? In town.
In town?
Not in the downtown, but yeah. In the fields. There's a couple, you know, all those grassy areas, those were all covered by homes mm-hmm. at one time. There was between 700 and 800 people that lived in Port Gamble. As soon as the automobile became widely available and the service station was built, the service station was the last major facility built. Because like all small towns, the automobile killed small towns all over the U.S. So that service station was the last major building. And after that, when you look at maps, you see houses disappearing. And at one point, the company was sold houses for $25, and you came and got the house. You could have a house.
Jim, just a technical question. From the point of annexation idea, am I correct that it has to be contiguous property? We can't have feature and feature.
Right. Have
so outside of OPG property, what other areas would have to be incorporated in order to
We would start basically from the Chevron station, actually a little east of the Chevron station where our property line ends, and would go up around the bottom of Gamble Bay and then straight. Yes, Gamblewood, not all of Gamblewood, but the west side of the bay would be. And then only half of the peninsula, so we would split the peninsula so the Hood Canal houses would not be on it, just the eastern side of the peninsula.
Would it essentially follow the highway?
No, I think the road you're talking about, Gamble Road, I think it's called, isn't it? That where they go up to the farms? That would be kind of the split.
Yeah.
I wish I would have brought the map with me.
Yeah, I'm trying to
follow
that. Yeah. That
street parallel that.
But it'd be on both sides of the street, but it wouldn't go all the way over.
For sure, you'd want to pick up part of the Rye Park. The Rye Park won't be necessarily draining to the east; it'll drain to the west. But I would highly recommend you try to pick up the Rye Park because that's a natural for just in terms of maybe someday they want to make other improvements there.
Are you talking about on that bridge?
No, not we're contemplating a mountain bike ride.
Okay.
And you probably want to see if you can capture that.
We'll bring the map to you. We're actually going to be splitting a precinct, but the county said we can split a precinct, actually.
Okay.
So I'd bring the map to you, and you could kind of orient me on.
Sure. Could you give us an estimate of how many residents are in the thing? You gave us a number to support Gamble.
In the future, there will be about 200 to 250 homes.
But I mean, I was thinking about as of when it's about to measure my homes.
So Gamblewood, yeah, the county is going to have to provide that for us, and I can get that from the assessor.
So I'm not looking at this as a really major income producing thing at this point. Because we're not talking about a lot of residents. You've got your property, but it's not developed. It's not.
That's a question too that I had in my mind. Is it voters in the next area who vote?
It is
property owners.
Right. It is vote residents. Mm-hmm. So residents in that area. Okay. So affected area. And that's the only vote. So the Kingston people will not vote on this, just residents in the affected area.
So you would be involved in outreach with
sure.
All your tenants basically. Yeah. I guess there are probably some private outreach industries.
So, there's the collaborations we talked about. There's collaborations we haven't thought of. The county has a huge geography to cover. And just like the community facility, the county could never have taken that on. And to have a local agency to work with would be amazing.
June will be upon us sooner than we can imagine. And so I think if we got some of the answers to those questions about boundaries and that sort of thing.
And so what's the idea? Is June when you have to file?
Right, we have to file in June for a November election. So what we would do is probably hire a PR firm to help us with that messaging, and hopefully we could work with you on some of that messaging. If the commission so desires to get it on the ballot, we'll move forward on getting it on the ballot for a November election. No, but I have met with them, and we looked at the map together, and they said we could do
okay.
What.
So that's kind of another step.
Yep.
As we go forward, what are the boundaries so right. You can see them on the map? Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now we do have the Port of Eglon to deal with, and I
have no idea why we're
in
Port of Eglon.
If you look at the county map, Eglon is not part of, or Port Gamble is not part of the Port of Eglon, but we need to figure out why you're paying taxes to the Port of Eglon.
Like a whopping $50 a year.
Yeah. So anyway.
So we need to see their boundaries. That
right.
I don't get how that ever was.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Unless they're taxing
but
water.
The eastern part of the mill site is, I just don't understand it.
Yeah.
We could still establish boundaries as long as they're adjacent to the Port of Eglon. So you may have a little piece of your mill site.
There's no logic to it because there's no connection between us and the benefits people have. People living on the hillside are getting from the port.
Well, you know, back in the Mosquito Fleet days, there may have been a pier
right,
out by the mill site that they had, and it went back and forth.
The ferries used to be here and go down.
Okay, well, maybe that was the
case. We'll figure it out.
Do you think we can get the information about boundaries and that kind of further input before next week?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important. You say a PR firm, but I think it's very important to get the information out early, just having contemplated this. Mm-hmm. So if it's while getting someone to help us do this, I think we need to start posting information when we get it as a board, mm-hmm. so that the public can see what we're up to.
Mm-hmm.
Not, there's no smoke in this room.
Right.
Where's the mirrors?
So we are.
It's very important that the whole community is on board with this.
Yeah.
And I think, too, we need to take a lesson from Paul's board's two failed efforts. I mean, the first failure, I can really understand. I just thought they way overreached with what they're trying to do. The second one's maybe a little bit harder. And maybe it's just that they didn't do a good job of telling their story. But I'm a little concerned that people are going to look at Pulsebo as a trendsetter, and we shouldn't go to that kind of thing.
Can, just as a thing, can you prepare a press release for the March community news, April community news? March will be upon us, isn't
yeah.
upon us. So that, think forward, you know, mm-hmm. so that there's, Richard might want to write an article like that, so, you know, 250 words type of thing, you know.
Yeah, see if you can get Terry invited.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they're probably interested in the story. Plus, about then is probably when we'll have a lot of information.
Well, thank you, John.
Thanks.
As always.
I think about it. I think it would be really meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
Any other thoughts you think we should be thinking about, or issues we should be sort of contemplating that Jeff talked to you?
I think so. I think we did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a have to for either one of us.
Right.
It's just, you know, a little a marginally better world for the world if we do.
Mm-hmm.
And it opens up, you know, more possibilities for shared facilities than we could do, or we will do. Just
yeah.
I think one of the positives is, even though you are the evil giant, you've developed responsibly. I mean, what you've done in Port Gamble is beautiful, and I think the port has demonstrated responsible development. So the two of us, really, there really is no reason for the feeling of smoke and mirrors and Walmart coming into Port Gamble.
Well, the only thing I've ever been able to do is just be out in front of people and tell people what, ask people what they think and
right.
what we're thinking, and then stay true to what we've said.
Mm-hmm.
And you have
it's not an easy time to do anything in the world
no.
without catching heat for anything you do, and then, you know, but is that a reason not to do the right thing?
All right.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Can you let us know which of the next couple of Tuesday mornings you might be able to come back and continue this conversation? Yeah, we can talk to connect with Lori.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. See ya.
Okay.
Since this is a special meeting, if I could get a motion from someone to direct staff to start researching this, then it would be official that I have a task.
So, for ballot measure in the November election.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
I assumed that was a second.
That was a second.
A friendly
that
amendment.
Was actually a friendly amendment.
Yeah.
Okay. Clarification.
Yeah. Get more specific.
So move was.
And all voted in favor of that.
Okay.
Okay. All right, so Jim, you want to walk us through the discussion about payments and sanctions and attorney fees?
Sure. Well, we're all aware of the judgment on February 10th from Judge Bassett. The judge has set an order. He filed it on the 17th. We have 10 days to respond with payment. The sanctions awarded by the judge were $74,930, and the attorney fees and costs awarded to the judge by the judge were $91,486.15. So the total judgment was $166,416.15. The check needs to be written to the law offices of Carl J. Marquardt trust account, and it will be distributed from the trust account. So we are prepared to pay that so we don't accrue 12% interest. That's what happens after tomorrow is 12% interest. So need the commission's approval to move forward on that judgment payment.
Is there a resolution number here?
We don't need a resolution for that.
I move that we authorize the director to proceed with payment of sanctions and attorney fees.
I will second that, but I have one concern that it may be construed as a friendly amendment.
Good.
Which is that, here's my concern, and we can figure out how to address it. Either party has 30 days to appeal from the date of objection being entered. So I don't want to find ourselves in a position of having issued a check for $166,000 plus and then an appeal being filed. And we are, in effect, financing the appeal against it. So I would be, I guess, looking for our attorney to confirm one way or another that by acceptance of the check, the plaintiff is waiving, I don't want to say waiving the right to appeal, that is kind of a different connotation, but affirmatively and conclusively stating that there will be no appeal. I don't know exactly what form that would take. I think Jim, working with Kathleen, can decide, you know, when that point is reached, but the, I think my concern is pretty simple.
Is it 12% prorated?
Per annum.
So it's 12% a year.
Yeah.
Right, this is statutory.
So it's not a $16,000 thing as of the next day.
One way to address that, I was thinking about that, is to wait until the 17th of March, which is only another week or two, to cut the check. So we're authorized, and on the 18th of March, that check gets distributed. And that would
be one way to do it. We would incur a small amount of interest.
Right.
Just a very rough calculation in my head, we're looking at about 1% a month, so what's that, $1,600 for the 1 month period. Mm-hmm. But I don't honestly know how big a risk a deal is. It's just one of those, I'm the paid paranoid in the room. So.
Yeah, I don't really want to get into discussing the legal matters.
No.
So I'm a little comfortable going any further than that. But I withdraw my motion and I defer to Commissioner McIntyre.
So we might your motion. I would move that we authorize staff to cut the check to satisfy the judgment for sanctions and attorney's fees and to deliver the check subject to confirmation either by the lapse of time or other enforceable agreement with the plaintiff that there would be no appeal.
Second.
Any other discussion? And that's clear to you exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay, so all in favor?
Okay. I think that's great. Pick up.
Okay. And is this information from concerning apology basically FYI?
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know that we did file our appeal with the Department of Ecology. I think that the report that Mott McDonald did for us is pretty conclusive that there could be some sediment transport. And I think Carolyn did a very good job of stating in this appeal that we're not looking to stop the project. No. All we're looking for is 5-year monitoring, and if the navigation channel gets silted in, that the Navy will help us in dredging.
We're really talking about could be incremental.
Yep.
Just so we're monitoring it and then assessing, does it and does it not have impact on future costs?
We're actually asking for a pre-dredge survey and a post-dredge survey, so after 5 years, just so we know exactly.
I mean a pre-project, post-project.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then monitoring, sure, mm-hmm. That works.
Yeah. Was the McDonald report attached?
No, Carolyn didn't want to attach it. She thought that that would be her defense if they wanted to go farther. She's basically just saying that this is our problem, and if they say prove it, then she can prove it.
Do they have the out of accepting our post-dredge survey as the baseline?
It's not in there, but they certainly can ask that.
So they don't have to spend money.
What was your using our post-dredge survey
from 2 years ago?
Since it's only been a few years, it would save the cost of that if they want to use it.
So. I wanted to ask if there was any questions from the audience at this point on the topics that we've talked about.
The only question I would have is I'd be curious, in the topic you were just mentioning, I'm presuming that is in relation to the bridge, the future bridge.
Right. Yes.
So I'd be, is the report of the analysis or of potential for sediment coming from the bridge, is that something that's available to the public?
Sure. Everything's available to the public, and I can get you a copy. Or I was actually thinking of just posting it on our website.
Yeah, that would be great. I think that would be good.
I'll just post it on the website.
That's the only question I would have. I would just comment that I found the discussion interesting about the annexation, and I can see the benefits and interest, the reason that you're looking at it.
Thank you. And we have to have a little note that says, thank you, Betsy, on the posting to the website. Thank you, Betsy.
Oh, you mean about the posting.
Yeah. Okay. Any other comments, Jim?
Just for you, Betsy, if any of your other people want to hear this, this recording will be on our website so they can listen to the entire discussion. So, because I know a couple people couldn't make it to the meeting today and they were upset,
okay.
But the whole meeting will be on the website and download.
I would just
okay.
About the meeting, and I decided to come, so and I'm not with some other people.
Oh, no, no.
If anybody else here knows is interested, you can share.
Yeah.
This is a public meeting, right?
Yeah, right.
No notice was provided, so
yeah.
And I appreciate your pointing that out, that sometimes not just us, but other people can just lump people together as our proud or the other.
Yeah, right,
people,
right.
We need to guard against that.
In the world today, we certainly need to do that.
Yes.
Okay, Commissioner comments?
I have nothing new to report.
Trying to think if I've heard anything. It's been so long since we met, it's almost 10 days. I'm really looking forward to this afternoon and this evening. And I'm going to mention also that Mary, are you planning to go to the stakeholders meeting on Friday?
Yes.
Okay. I think that could be a very interesting meeting from a couple of different perspectives. One is, I think they're following up on the idea of, with the Swedish,
yes,
pulled out of the medical center here, so there's going to be some good discussion about that. I don't know that we have support of a direct role in that, but it's one of those things that affects the community, we to be aware of it. I'm not sure at one point there was discussion that would there be a presentation from the buyers of the Kingston or Kingston lumber property. And I've heard a little bit about that. I'm anxious to hear it, you know, from the horse's mouth, so to speak, so I know what's out valid and what's not.
Well, and I think one of the challenges on that topic is that guy won't be in town, and so it would be a presentation made on his behalf by somebody from the stakeholders. And so I think there's some conversation back and forth about whether that's the best way to do that or rather wait a month. So we'll see what happens when we get there.
Has it closed or is
Pardon?
It still?
I believe it has not yet closed. They're still waiting on the environmental elements.
So the port is on the agenda for an update. The port's on the agenda, so I'm doing an update with stakeholders. And I have a question for you all about stakeholders, because I haven't been involved, but I'm the treasurer. Aren't dues due April 1?
I couldn't answer that, but dues are due whenever the treasurer sends out an invoice.
Okay, because I just got, you know, payment from Johnny, not Johnny, Sonny. And so I'm assuming that everybody needs to pay their dues, but I don't know the rules.
The question is, do you have to send out invoices?
That's true, that's true.
So will this discussion be part of your update? Mm-hmm. Good.
I think since you voted on it, now it's public knowledge. We're
good.
Going to move forward and trying to see what happens.
Cool.
It'll be interesting to see what reaction we get from the stakeholders group and mm-hmm. their various perspectives on
it. Right.
Can you come up with a press release? Well, I'm talking about an article, but something you can wrap through us so we can see. Mm-hmm. So we're all on the same page. If we're queried by the public on why are we doing this and what are the pros and cons.
So I have a political publicist that I've worked with for 20 years who is very good. And now that we're moving forward, I'll contact him for a proposal.
Yeah.
And I'll bring that by you. But those are the kind of things that people who understand communication like that on a matter of
I think it's important to get the information out.
Yeah, to get it out in a clear and concise way mm-hmm. that people can digest readily and not just get sidetracked. Because I can see not everybody's going to think, you know, development out there is a great idea.
Right.
You know, tourism or any other is a great idea. But being able to explain clearly why we're doing it is key.
I can't imagine us having any more than 500 or 600 people we're talking to. It's really not going to be that big of an audience.
Yeah.
Which means every vote really counts.
It does.
Well, I can see Richard saying, "Oh, I want an article on this," and the Herald. Mm-hmm. So it'd be good to think ahead of time. What are the important points that need to get out to give people an understanding? And mm-hmm. getting ahead of that is probably better than picking up Friday's paper. Port gobbles up gamble.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I went to the Kitsap Transit's ferry. Fair meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was someone in the audience that we all know well who stood up and said, "Why are you ruining my community?" And, you know, to Kitsap Transit people. And that has resonated in my head as we have talked about this mm-hmm. possibility, because there are really a lot of people who really do not believe that Kingston is going to change. And that isn't our choice. Our choice is in what way. And political publicist, good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anything else for the
good? Did you have your first coffee with the director meeting?
The
coffee with the executive director?
Oh, no, that's not until end of March. March 20th, I think.
I encourage you to announce them and make them very visible to the public, so that anyone who... There may be people who want to do something like public comment but don't want to do it in the public meeting.
Sure.
So that they can talk to you about mm-hmm. whatever it is.
Can do that.
So it can be a way to provide another venue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good. Anything else? Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Okay.
All in favor?